Drive Guys coming to you from the Golden One Center. Kings and Bucks tonight. So Drapes just explained that he tried to get some popcorn, no big deal, but he was told in no uncertain terms, hey, mister, you got your radio show, your BMW doesn't mean you run things around here.
Mercedes.
Don't I'm say sorry. That. I apologize.
Never.
I apologize.
Oh, my goodness, yes, Drapes. Right. Come on. I mean, yeah. Whitey, come on.
Yeah, I know. I know. Like, I apologize. Let's see here. We got from Manny Too Legit. You want an apple pie that I got from Walmart, Drapes? I got you.
Nah. I'm not an apple pie guy.
Brian Williams,
I appreciate it.
Get him some popcorn after he gives me a ride in his Mercedes to the store to get his popcorn. So anyway, people are willing to help you out here. And I guess your mom can.
Yeah, my mom, she's back in Philadelphia listening. I don't know if I should say this. I might get fired, but I'm going to say it anyway. Mom texted me because she's listening to the program. And she knows when I get hungry, I get hangry. Like,
she probably
that's
knows
just me.
Better than anybody.
Better than anybody. She said, Kyle, what's up with them not giving you popcorn? Sounds pretty childish. Haters.
Because I'm a shoo-in for hate of the year.
Text of the day, winner right there. Right
haters.
There.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Well, we got plenty to be excited about despite that situation. I'm a little nervous, actually, about talking to Marcus Johnson bottom of the hour.
No, I can't wait. You ain't bring any popcorn? Oh, no. All right, next time. Yeah, they're not open yet. All
anybody
right.
who wanders by who happens to ask in the arena, Drake's like, hey, you got my popcorn?
Hey, you have to literally ask everybody that comes through there now.
Seriously. I need popcorn. So it's like a ritual, the popcorn and the cookies. And then
right.
You know, then you get the water. And so that's why I'm off today.
I'm off my game. Plus, you know, daylight savings a couple days ago. Yeah. You got all that going on.
That's been rough.
Yeah. Anyway, Marcus Johnson. From the Bucks TV crew. He's going to join us, an all-time great. Looking forward to that. Also, we got Brendan today is going to join us.
Brendan, okay.
What's going on here?
Was at shoot-around today, too.
So. Yep. Now, tonight, Domas can make franchise history. We talked about this a little bit yesterday. He's got 46 straight triple-doubles, so he's tied with Jerry Lucas, who in 67-68 also had 46 straight triple-doubles. So Domas can make franchise history tonight, and he can get closer to the all-time NBA record for double-doubles. Doesn't matter. Either way, nobody's going to notice, right? The NBA large, no one pays any attention to him. They don't even know what's going on.
They don't even know that he's averaging 20, 12, and 8, like putting up those kind of numbers. And what's so crazy about Domas, like, it's already foregone conclusion he's going to get a double-double, right? Like, he makes it look so easy right now. Like, he's at 46. He's going to go to 47 unless injury or foul trouble or something. I mean, the way this guy plays, the way he gobbles up rebounds, the point should be there. And so mark it down.
I will say I saw something at NBA.com today that was pretty respectful towards Domas. It was a preview of the game tonight, NBA.com, and they talked about two key matchups. They talked about Dame versus Fox, and they talked about this Giannis Sabonis rivalry that goes back to his time in OKC. And I was like,
really?
Okay.
Rivalry.
He had a triple double. I guess they both had triple doubles last game, Giannis and Domas.
When
they last played in that incredible
overtime
game.
Yeah. And it was the first time that there's been two triple doubles in the same game by opposing players. I got that stat right here, Whitey, as I was getting ready for today's prep. For the game, I'd have to pull it up here. My computer's acting up.
Yeah.
But, I don't know about rivalry, they want to call it, but, yeah.
Well, that was nice.
Yeah.
I was like, well, okay.
Yeah. All right, I got it right here. Last meeting.
That was a great game.
One of two times this season we've seen opponents record triple-doubles in the same game.
Mm-hmm.
Şengün and Jaylen Brown did it on January 21st, and Domas and Giannis back on January 14th.
Yeah, that was an especially difficult loss, wasn't it, that one?
It was. It was a thrilling game. From a broadcaster standpoint, it was great. It was great to call. You had De'Aaron Fox, the layup, to force overtime after we missed all them free throws and everything, and then Dame Lillard with that game winner. And, you know, that was part of that stretch where it was Milwaukee and then Phoenix. Two heartbreaking losses back to back, if I'm correct, and but that was a heck of a game, man. That was a 143-142 stars shining brightly. That was a heck of a game to call.
That's going to be, I would bet, years from now when people are asking you about what was the best game you ever called. And who knows, there's going to be great games that we can't even dream of now that you'll call. But that one, I would think that might be one that you'll remember.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And because it was Dame Lillard, it was, you know, his first season. Bucks had been struggling. And, you know, some people got on me because as the Kings announcer, they thought I was a little too excited. But, man, that was...
That's why you can't get any popcorn.
That's why, right? They revoked my popcorn privileges. But when you're in that moment and you have an all-time great going off like that, and you just knew it too. Once he got the ball, once Lopez gave it to him or whoever it was, like, you knew he's going to pull up from the logo. And sure enough, bang. And so, you know, I got home that day, and I was happy with my call, even though we lost that one.
339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Ken has been hanging on. Ken joins us now on Sacktown Sports. Hello, Ken. What's up?
What's going on, guys? How you doing today?
Good, Ken. Good to hear from you. What's on your mind?
Hey, man, you guys were talking earlier. I do not trust this Kings team to be in a one and done. They have to get to six seed to get at least a best out of seven playoff series. If they're in the play-in game, I don't trust them. I don't trust them, especially if they're playing at home. This team is wildly inconsistent, and I am done. And you're talking about that Milwaukee game. To me, losing to Milwaukee, then losing to Phoenix, then losing to Indiana, to me, that changed the Kings' season somewhat. I thought they would have been in the top four, but after that game, I think it got them down to six or seven, and I think they languished there. There's been at least six games this season that the Kings have literally given away in the last minute. That Bucks game is one that I will never forget because they missed four out of five free throws that would have iced that game. That three-pointer by Dame would have been incidental. So I think for this team to make any noise, they're going to have to get in the playoff at least in the sixth spot. If they're not in the sixth spot, in the one and done, I think we lose. Even if we're dominating the Lakers this year, I think if they play the Lakers in that game, the Lakers beat them because I don't trust them.
Wow.
Just my opinion.
All right. Thank you, Ken. Yeah, that's a wise observer of the games.
I know, man.
And you can certainly understand. You know, there's something to be said for optimism, but – oh, in a one game. Hopefully it won't come to that. I don't even want to think about it. That would be gut-wrenching.
Yeah, you're right. It would be gut-wrenching, and hopefully it doesn't come to that. But let me ask you this. Ken's talking about I want to be the sixth seed, you know, or one of the top six. I get it. Right now that would be you would face Minnesota, who maybe you match up well, especially with Kat being hurt. But would it be the worst if you wind up with the eighth seed? Meaning you get through the play and make it to eight and have to face OKC in the first round. Like, is Ken off the bandwagon then? Is he saying, you know what, even if we make it through, like, I think if you get through and you match up with OKC, I actually like our chances in that one. I really do. There are several teams I would not want to face, obviously, Denver and the Clippers.
I think Denver's going to end up one, don't you?
You think so?
I think that, yeah.
Right now, they're half a game behind OKC. Denver's playing their best basketball. They've won 9 out of 10. OKC's won 8 out of 10. I don't know. But the point is, does it depend on matchups? For instance, if you have to, let's say you're top six and you go against Minnesota, you'd be fine with that? What if Denver winds up three? They're not, but what if... I'd be afraid of that matchup. And so to me, top six isn't as important as getting through and getting a good matchup. I'm about the long game, Whitey. I'm not about just, all right, make it to get the sixth seed and then lose first round. No, if you can be Miami, if you could be Miami of last year, and it's not even about going all the way to the finals, getting that perfect matchup where you can beat somebody, that's what I'm about. And so – I bring this up because Ken seems to think if they don't get a top six seed, then the season's over. They're done. They're not. I'm saying there's still a possibility to make some noise with the 7 or 8 seed.
I understand that, and I understand Ken's point, though, which is just that, yeah, you're right. That could happen. But the way this team is given to such swings one game to the next that a one-game situation
is scary.
Is terrifying.
You don't know.
It doesn't mean they won't win, but
right.
It's like, I can't trust them.
Which Kings
it's
team
hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to feel good about that. That doesn't mean they won't win. And then if they win, you're right. It's like, ooh, okay, now who do we play?
Right.
But
right.
I get his point. It's like, in a one game, this team, the way this team is, like tonight, you said it yourself. Everyone's with you. What are the Kings going to do tonight? I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah. So that in a one game, yeah. It'd be like, ah. It'd
right.
be it'd make people a little nervous.
Yeah, okay, that's what he said. Yeah, I get it, because I'd be nervous too, especially against the caliber of competition we talked about with Golden State, Lakers, Dallas maybe. I mean, in any of those games, Luka could go off for 50, LeBron, same thing. And I don't know. I keep going back to the conversations other cities are having, and we're not there. We're not privy, and this is Sacramento. We're different. I get that. But look at Indiana right now. They're in the seventh seed. And I know they lost Ben Mathurin. But this is a great season for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Kings have a better record. And so it's all about perspective. You know? It's 3 years ago, this would be a banner year for the Kings.
Yes.
Fans would be, you know, excited, pumping. And so that's what I talk about, the negativity. It's hard for me to embrace that. And I understand the expectations were higher. I understand the disappointment is deeper because when you lose to teams you shouldn't. But this team is still on track for 46, 47 wins, which is not anything to sneeze at.
That's very good when you consider the bigger picture, what the Kings have done historically. A 45-win season even is really something to celebrate.
Right.
There's one more aspect to the whole thing, though, besides expectations, that I think is leading fans to feel as discouraged as they are. See what you think of this when we come right back here from the Golden One Center. We also have Marcus Johnson, bottom of the hour, the Drive guys on Sactown Sports. Well, the Kings have not beaten the Bucks since the Golden One Center has been constructed, so it seems like a great time to take care of that tonight after having come so close to beating him last time they played this season. They're due.
Tonight?
Sure.
15 straight losses? But
no. What happened to Mr. Optimism?
No, I feel good about this game because I think eventually this team has to wake up and say, you know what? We're tired of these losses. We're tired of getting beat at home. Like, enough is enough. And so you hope tonight is that night. This would be a statement game. If they came out and rolled the Milwaukee Bucks, that would be a big-time statement. And, you know, Giannis is probable, so I think he's going to play. Keegan, I believe, was questionable tonight, and so I think he's going to play. But, I mean, this is a massive game against a team that's had your number. And to your point, if I'm Malik, remember he missed those free throws at Milwaukee January 14th. He hasn't forgotten about that. If I'm De'Aaron Fox, he hasn't forgotten Dame Lillard hitting the logo buzzer beater on us. And so I agree with you. I mean, this should be they'll be ready. They'll be ready.
But when we talk about how disappointed fans are this year or discouraged, there's two big reasons. One, as we've said, it's because the expectations were so high. But we have to be honest. There's one other big reason why fans, I think, are entitled to feel disappointed, let down, and that is the fact that you look at this roster and it is almost identical to the roster that they started the season with. You got Mason Jones. You've had a few tweaks here or there because guys have been injured. You have the same starting lineup that you had the beginning of last season. And I know that starting lineup was very good, but that's another thing that has led to this disappointment. Like, all right, great year. What are we going to do? We didn't do anything. That's all right. Deadline. They're going to do they weren't able to do anything. Now, that doesn't mean that the Kings were wrong. Maybe all the moves that were available were not good moves. But I can understand as a fan when all the media talk was, Kings going to be active. Kings going to be active. Great. We'll do something. We'll add to this. Oh, nothing.
Right.
That leads to disappointment.
No, exactly. And not only that, you see other teams making moves, getting better, improving, going for it, if you will. And it's sort of like, you know, that the kid sitting at home, you know, all his neighbors got the nice new shiny toys, and his mom's like rewrapping his Tonka truck from last year for him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, that Tonka truck was good last year, Mom, but I need something new, fresh, and shiny. And, you know,
when the crackers get a little stale, that's all, like we said yesterday.
Yeah, exactly. The crackers are getting stale right now. And sometimes it's, you know, we liken it to Denver a lot. Denver made tweaks throughout the run. They didn't just run it back with everybody and say, all right, this is it. We just, you know, we compare them to Denver. Denver each year made, whether it was Aaron Gordon, KCP, Reggie Jackson, like they made some, you know, Christian Brown through the draft, Bruce Brown, you know, they added him. And so they made minor tweaks. It wasn't just, all right, same team, I'm going to run it back. And at the beginning of the season, I said, Whitey, if we thought the same effort and the same squad and the same energy is going to be good enough this year, we're sorely mistaken. And that's what's happened. I feel like guys feel like, all right, it worked last year, so it'll work this year. But then the shots aren't falling. We mentioned Keegan Murray's numbers being down, De'Aaron Fox, his efficiency, Kevin Herter. And so guys are playing at such a high level last year, maybe – Monty should have thought, all right, maybe we can't sustain that. You know, if everybody's having a career year efficiency-wise, eventually, you know, you got to come back down to level. And so maybe that's some of the shortcomings of this team and this franchise as they built for this year.
We talked about some of these numbers earlier. The Kings right now, based on their scoring margin, their expected record is 32-31. Now, that doesn't matter because they're not that. But just for a team that has outscored opponents by the slim margin the Kings have, typically you're a 500 team when you do that. The last 18 games, they're 9-9. So right now, of late, the Kings are, they've been a team that's kind of just treading water. To me, the key with the Kings right now is, you know, we talk a lot about them playing hard, control your effort. And Malik said something yesterday that absolutely sums it up. It's not enough for this team right now to play hard. This team consistently, and he said it, hit first. That's always our mentality when we win. Hit first, play harder than the other teams, win 50-50 balls, get offensive rebounds, things like that. Now, some of that is like every team says that, but that truly is where this Kings team is right now. Every game, playing hard is, it's a requisite, but it's not enough. You have to play harder than the other team because quite often you're giving something up in terms of size or depth, and you have to make shots, and you got to be scrappy to give yourself the best chance to win. That's just the reality right now.
Yeah, it is, but that's hard to do a full 48.
Oh, it is.
And,
it is.
And that's where I think the team is having a problem because it's not, you know, one game they have it, the next game they don't. Like, they'll have it in the first quarter but won't have it in this, like – and so they have to figure out a way to play like that, like you mentioned, scrappy.
It's not easy. Yeah.
You know, a full game, no matter who's in there. Like, and it's, I think it's hard. And what winds up happening in the NBA, you let your guard down, then guys get hot, guys get comfortable. And we don't have the team, the type of team defensively where we can say, all right, he's hot. We're going to shut him down. We're going to take him out. Maybe we run a double, but then by that time it's too late. Everybody else is feeling good and feeling hot. And I think that's where our problem is. And I think as we address this in the offseason, you need a defensive stopper, a 3-and-D guy. I believe that has to be a priority for this team. And an upgrade maybe at some positions as well. But you need a run stopper, somebody defensively that can say, oh, my gosh, DeMar DeRozan, he's 11 of 12 in the second half. I got him. I'm going to throw it, you know, because when you run doubles, that compromises your defense, Whitey. If I'm an offensive team, I want you to double our best guy. I want you to try and get it because then that opens it up for some of the other guys. And so I think that's where the Kings are having an issue right now.
And that's been one of the problems. Mike Brown's talked about the fact that there have been a couple of games. It's a Chicago game comes to mind in which the Kings basically have had to double more than one guy, which is the math won't work.
That's a recipe for disaster, right?
Yeah, you just can't. You don't have enough defenders to do that. Do you think it's hurt Keegan the way the Kings have tried to make him into that defensive stopper?
I don't think so. I think, you know, when you look at Keegan Murray, there he's been asked to do the defensive end, sure. But offensively, the game is more complex for him this year than it was last year. Meaning They're asking him not just to stand in the quarter, not just to be a catch-and-shoot guy.
Right.
They're asking him to put it on the deck, to make plays for other. And I think it's a lot now. And I think, and we had this conversation last week, and I think you talked about how in this offense, some night is your night, some night it's not. Well, every night is De'Aaron Fox's night.
Mm-hmm.
Every night is DeMontis Sabonis' night. How can we get every night to be Keegan Murray night?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that asking too much to have three guys every night it be their night?
Jerry Reynolds said something about Keegan earlier in the season that has really stuck with me, and he pointed out that last year Keegan, as a youngster, was basically taking the shots he was comfortable with.
Right,
you know,
he set right.
a record for threes by a rookie. This year, with more responsibility and, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. It's like he's having to take more shots that he's less comfortable with. And he's really struggled with that.
Right.
And as the King's like, no, you got to shoot more. And that means he's got to take more shots that he's not entirely comfortable with. And that's a big time adjustment.
Yeah. And more shots off the dribble, mid range. They want him to get to the hole. And, you know, I know I've been hard on Keegan. You know, the number four overall pick, I expect great things from this guy. But Jerry also said Peja took a while for him. His second to third year leap was tremendous. And, you know, I question, you know, the equal opportunity offense at times, you know, because we've talked about it. When the offense bogs down, what do? Who can you turn? We've seen Malik do the one-on-one game. We've seen De'Aaron. But outside of that, you know, we're stuck. And there's no way this Sacramento Kings team, with all the talent offensively, should score 14 points in a quarter.
No.
That should not happen.
No.
14.
No.
In today's NBA, Whitey?
I know.
Like, guys are scoring 70 in the game single-handedly, and we're scoring 14 in a – that should not happen.
That's an embarrassment.
Yeah.
Jay has something for us. This is from practice today. This is Keegan talking about no excuses. He's got to be able to play well on both sides of the basketball.
No. I feel like I'm capable of playing both ways, and I've shown it throughout the year different times. So I'm not a guy that's excuse-oriented. So it's just I love playing defense. I love playing offense. And obviously one side's picked up and the other side's kind of not been there. So
hopefully Keegan can deliver tonight. Meanwhile, Selena has delivered.
The delivery has been made. My girl Selena just dropped it off. YouTube chatters, you can see what I hold. This is what I'm talking about. There's like 8 billion of these sitting downstairs, and I couldn't get one when I walked in. Thankfully, my girl Selena hooked me up. This is the black box I'm talking about, full of popcorn.
Thank you.
You hear that? That's popcorn right there.
You better check that. I wouldn't be surprised if that's like – I wouldn't be surprised if it's unpopped popcorn. It's to watch this.
Selena wouldn't do that.
No, she wouldn't do it.
Nah, it'd be some golden popcorn in here, man. It might be $1 million. Selena would take care of your boy.
Cracker Jack got a prize at the bottom of that box.
You know, it's like the key to the city, right? You get the – I should have the key to the popcorn. Like, I should get unlimited popcorn when I come to this spot. You know what I mean, Whitey? Seriously, it's popcorn, bro.
I smell another endorsement. That's what I smell.
Ooh, pop. Do we have any local popcorn vendors? Man, you're a businessman. Yeah, but I got my King's popcorn, so I'm happy right now. I'm happy.
Wonderful.
Let's take a break, right? We got.
Yes, I'm happy, too, because the great Marcus Johnson is going to join us when we come back to the Golden One Center. The Drive Guys on Sacked Up. Well, this is exciting. Of course, we got the Kings and the Bucks. Kyle Draper has his popcorn now. He's happy. Yes. We're excited, and I'm excited for what it's worth here because our next guest is one of my all-time favorite NBA players, Bucks TV analyst, all-time NBA great, the one and only Marcus Johnson. Marcus, thanks for your time. I have to ask you first thing, would it be accurate if I said you were one of the original point forwards? Is that accurate, sir?
Well, you know, Kyle.
Is this Kyle or Kevin? Who am I talking to?
This is Kevin. Yeah, we're both here.
Right. Yeah, we're both here. What's up, Mark?
Okay. All right. Everything's good. Listen, so here's the deal. I actually coined the phrase point forward back in the early 80s, playing against the New Jersey Nets in the playoff series. Their pressure, Michael Ray Richardson, another former Crenshaw high great like I am, Darwin Cook. I mean, they were giving us fits. We had a bunch of point guards. injured. They were just doubling and pressing, and Mike Dunleavy Sr., they had him spinning around like a top until Don Nelson came during a shoot around in that playoff series and told me that he wanted me to bring the ball up the floor to alleviate the pressure. I was going against Buck Williams, Albert King. So my response to him, guys, was that, okay, so instead of a point guard, I'm like a point forward, because I was to initiate the offense from the forward position. He's like, yeah, you're my point forward. This is how we want you to run the high post, dribble to the wing, let Sidney Moncrief cut off the high post, blah, blah, blah. And so I started that terminology. I was traded after that season, and then Paul Pressey assumed the position and made it his own and did a great job running that position. So in terms of your question, you know, yes, you know, technically, definitely one of the first, because I named the position. But other guys, Rick Barry, you know, up in the Bay Area, Golden State, was a great point forward for the Warriors. Maurice Stokes back in the 60s. If young people will Google him, you'll see a guy at 6'8 who could push it and handle. And Johnny Johnson, the late Robert Reed, who just passed away. Johnny Johnson also passed away. A lot of my contemporaries, guys, are dropping like flies. I'm blessed. But so there's been a lot of great point forwards. So I can't say LeBron and the current iterations. But in terms of the first one to utter that phrase, you would never see that phrase uttered for that playoff nice. Series between the Bucks and the Nets in 1984 around May, I believe. So, yes.
Invented the term. That's awesome.
Hey, that's pretty sweet. Yeah. Marcus, it's Kyle Draper here, man. Excited for tonight's game. You talk about point forward. We got a point center here in Domantas Sabonis. What do you think about Domas and what he's doing? I still can't believe this guy wasn't an all-star.
Yeah, this dude is crazy, man. I mean, yeah, you know, I'm just kind of realizing, and I know he was rebounding like crazy, leading the league and dropping a dub every single night. But the fact that he's averaging over 8 assists a game, you know, he and Jokic, the Joker, the only two guys to put up the kind of numbers they're putting up. I loved him as a pacer. He gave us a multitude of problems in Indiana with his passing, with his footwork inside, with his ability to finish going to his left, his standstill jumper. I mean, I love him. I love everything about him. And he's going to be a real challenge for us tonight, to try and get to him in space, not let him pick up a head of steam where he can spin and step through and do all that tricky stuff that his daddy used to do back in the day before the Achilles injury slowed him down. So for me, as a guy, 68 years old, who watched Arvidas play when he was 21, 22, 23, dunking from the free throw line, you know, so I have a special affinity for what Domas is doing and just how good of a player. It's funny, Donnie Daniels, an assistant coach at Gonzaga, a good buddy of mine, grew up in Los Angeles, played at Bourbon Bay, a great high school in Los Angeles, but he was an assistant coach at Gonzaga. He told me when Sabonis first got off the plane on his long flight from overseas, he showed up at Gonzaga, he was jet lagged, he looked terrible. And Donnie and Mark Few, the coach at Gonzaga, is like, Donnie, you know, what have you done? And Dad's like, wait till he gets some rest, coach, and you'll see. And then he got some sleep and came back the next day and turned things out. But no, he's a tremendous player that I just love watching and seeing. And he competes. You know, you guys watch it. He really competes hard every single night out, every single possession. And then you can run your offense through him. And they ain't assist the game. He's kind of like, you know, Draymond with offense. Draymond Green with consistent offense.
Yeah.
And his ability to what you can do with him at the high post is just remarkable.
Marcus Johnson with us. Marcus, I want to thank you for mentioning Maurice Stokes, because, you know, he played for the Royals and they became the Kings. And his jersey actually hangs in here. The franchise has retired his jersey, so you may see that here when you're at the game tonight. So thank you for mentioning him. But I want to ask you about Giannis, because you played at the highest level in college and high school and played in the NBA for a long time. So you've seen a lot of great players. In your view, what makes Giannis so unique?
Well, it's his physical attributes. I mean, there was an article. I've been with the Bucks 9 years. Giannis was about 20, going on 21, I think, when I first got here. And they broke down kind of the link between his Achilles and his calf and his, you know, his forearms and his you know, middle finger to his to the back of his hand. And so just the length of Giannis. And Giannis, he showed his left hand is actually a little bit bigger than his right. That's why you see him try and dunk a lot of times, palming the ball with his left hand. So first of all, you start with that. 7 foot, jump out the gym, and then he played a lot of point guard over in Greece growing up. So he had this ability to handle the basketball and create for himself and others. So, I mean, you put all that together, it makes up for any other deficiencies that you might want to point to. And then the only thing you could point to is a consistent outside shot. But let me warn you, I've been watching him work for the last few years, and right now, this part of the season is when I really think he is about to break loose. And I always talk about channeling his inner KD, Kevin Durant, and get to his spot to shoot that mid-range jumper. He knocked down a couple against the Clippers, our last victory down the stretch in clutch situations. So that was good to see. So he adds that element to what is already an unstoppable transition game, points in the paint game. He's going to be a guy that can easily put up 30, 35 points a game and not break a sweat hardly.
Mm-hmm. Great Marcus Johnson joining us here on Sactel Sports 1140. Marcus, we saw you guys a couple of months ago, January 14th. That was Adrian Griffin's squad, though. Now you got Doc Rivers. How different is this Bucks team today?
Better defense, much better defense, better transition defense under Dr. Griffin, PhD in organizational leadership. I thought just thrown into a very difficult, challenging situation with the expectations of championship in Milwaukee. Our transition defense was the worst in the league. We were 30th, according to cleaning the glass. Overall transition defense, so we're much better under Doc for a while. We were top five in that aspect. Coming out of the All-Star break, first six games, 6-0, beat Minnesota, beat the Clippers in that stretch. We were number one in defensive rating for the first six games. So that was something else that Doc kind of turned around. He simplified the game for these guys. Doc's overall philosophy is, look, let me make things simple. So all you got to do is go out there and play and not have to think. And that's what he's been able to do. And these guys have responded to it. And then offensively, he's really plugged in, tapped into how to use Dame and Giannis more effectively. Sometimes in practice, they'll run two-man game for 5 minutes on one side of the floor, pass to each other, hand off to each other, roll, bring it back out, while the other three guys sit on the opposite side just watching, laughing, getting bored and joking about, what do we chop liver over here? But that's Doc's way of getting Giannis and Dame to understand how to play off each other. And now we're seeing them do it against the Clippers. They did it as well as they've done it all season long. Also against the Lakers, too. We lost that game, but against the Clippers, they've done a masterful job starting to play off each other. So that's a 24-year head coach. I often say that he's forgotten more than most of us experts will ever know about the game because of the voluminous amounts of film that he's watched and game prep that he's watched. He just has a great feel for communicating with players, relating to players. I've known him since he was an incoming freshman at Marquette. He used to run with us with the Bucks back at this dilapidated old high school gym in Milwaukee called University School. And he was just always just really, really ebullient, free spirited, just great personality, just a guy you like being around. And that's, I think, really carried him well as a coach for 24 years in the league.
Catching up with Marcus Johnson, Bucks TV analyst here as we get ready for the Kings and the Bucks. And Kyle mentioned the last time these two teams played. Sensational game, real heartbreaker for Kings fans. But how about that game, Marcus? What stands out to you about the first time these two teams played? Dame's three, of course, saving the day in overtime. When you think of that game, what do you remember first off the top of your head?
Well, I had forgotten about that game until I pulled up some of the stats on it off of NBA.com. And so I'm 143 to 142. The way these two teams shot the ball, both teams 50% plus from the field, over 40% from the three-point line. Both teams had four guys with 20 or more points. And Darren had, I think, 32. Giannis had a triple-double. Domas had 15 assists and a triple-double. I mean, it was a game for the ages. And then Mike Brown gets ejected, right? And then, we're up by 5 or 6 with 1:20 left. And the Kings make this incredible run. They send it to over OT. And they go up. Now we've got to make a run. Brooke Lopez's corner three, big, huge shot down the stretch to pull us within striking distance. And then, Damian Lillard has a watch endorsement with a watch called Tissot. It's French, Tissot. And so now, instead of Dame time, I like to say it's time to tap the Tissot. And it was Tissot tapping time down the stretch in that game because that shot, that sidestep three on Darren was just a thing of beauty. And so that was a classic. That was a classic. I know the score probably won't approach what it approached then. It'd be much better defense played on our part, at least we hope so. But if it can match the intensity and the elite level of offensive play that we saw back on January 14th, then we are in for a special treat tonight.
Marcus, I mentioned before the trade deadline that the Kings should go out there and get a guy like Patrick Beverley. And obviously you played in an era where, you know, guys didn't take any mess. How valuable is a guy like Patrick Beverley on a team, and do you need guys like that to compete for a title?
Well, and so here's the comparison for us. We signed P.J. Tucker in March of 2021, and he brought that dog element, that toughness that put us over the top and made us a championship team, being down, two games to zero to Brooklyn and Kevin Durant, being down in the finals, two games to zero to Phoenix and Chris Paul and that crew. And so it was P.J. Tucker's toughness that carried over to some of our other guys. Pat Connaughton talks about it openly, that just watching him battle in the post defensively just really inspired him to do the same and realize that even at his size at 6'5", he could fight these taller, bigger guys and not just acquiesce and capitulate post-up position. So and Patrick Beverley gives us a similar guy. He's not obviously as big as PJ, but in terms of just attitude and dog and communication and talkative and he's one of the most intensely focused players I've ever been around. There's just never, ever a moment of letdown with him. He's always upbeat. He's always walking around. He's always, prowling around, talking to guys in their face, good and bad, instructing and letting them know what he sees as a veteran ball player in this league. And a guy like that who had to start off playing in Russia and playing in some of the outposts, overseas that were tough sledding for a guy coming out of Arkansas when he did. And so for him to get into the league, I think he's got that appreciation. And so he wants to kind of just, lap up every single moment of being an NBA player that he can. And he enjoys himself, but he enjoys it in a way that brings such a level of intensity and winning in terms of his persona to your basketball team. So, yes, indeed, every team, I think if they want to get over the hump, Patrick Beverley by himself can't get you there. But if you're able to get there, he can help get you over the hump. And that's why we love having him.
Marcus, we appreciate your time. I got to mention this to you. We just had the Academy Awards, and part of watching a movie is suspending disbelief. And you ruined the movie White Man Can't Jump for me because I won't watch it because I think Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson, they beat you and somebody in 2-on-2. And I'm like, that's never going to happen. I can't watch the movie because I see that. I say, this is ridiculous. That would never happen. So thank you for ruining that movie for me.
Well, I had to walk Wesley through how to look better than I was as a player. Like, this was, you got to pump fake me here. You got to do this and do that. I mean, trust me, it took every energy, every ounce of acting chops that I've ever owned to be able to make Wesley Snipes look better than me as a basketball player. So thank you so much.
Hey, Raymond and White Man Can't Jump, man. That was awesome. Good stuff. Marcus, we'll see you in a little bit, man.
That sounds good, man. See you guys over there. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. The truly great Marcus Johnson. Yeah, just how it is. You watch movies like, no, I'm out. That's not going to happen.
Right. It's not realistic, right?
I can't watch it. when we come back, I didn't think this was possible, but tell you about something that actually made me hate the Lakers even more than I did.
Okay.
Next from the Golden One with the Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports. Kings tonight trying to beat the Bucks for the first time since 2016. I only know this because I looked up the box score. Kyle, maybe you did too. Do you know who the Kings' leading score was in that game when they beat the Bucks in 2016? It was at the Arco Arena.
Was 26? Isaiah Thomas.
No, it was actually Rudy Gay.
Oh, I was going to
say. Yeah, and I think, man, Rondo had a big game.
Oh, that was then.
Okay. DeMarcus didn't play. Kostakoufis, it was at the George Karl group. I think Giannis was in that game for the Bucks, but of course he wasn't close to being Giannis yet. But it's been a while.
Man, De'Aaron Fox was in high school. I just saw somebody tweeted. I'm like, man, that was I had hair back then. Like, you know, I had an afro back then. I mean, it's been a minute.
Uh-huh.
We owe these guys 15
yes, we do.
Losses in a row.
Yeah. Thanks to Marcus Johnson for joining us. That's really cool that I asked him about being the first point forward, because I was always kind of vague on that. And he said he invented the term, but he didn't say I was the first. He said there were guys that did it before me. I used that term.
Acquainted, yeah.
Yeah, that little humility there, right? He said, oh, there's guys that did it before me.
No,
I was the first one that called it that.
Yeah, that's that's in our lexicon now, right? That's
right.
Stuff that everybody says all the time. And so and he's a, you know, I know him obviously from White Man Can't Jump, you know, his playing career. He was a tough son of a gun, too. Like, he was a hard-nosed player, too, and you had to be
mm-hmm.
back in that era. And I like the fact that he talked about Patrick Beverley. You know, to get you over the hump, you need that kind of grit, that kind of toughness.
Mm-hmm. We're still working on it here in Sacramento. Bringing in that
yeah.
kind of guy.
Right? Oh, yeah, bringing yeah. in that kind of
yeah.
That has to
developing
be
that kind
up,
of guy.
Up high on Monty McNair's yeah. Priority list.
That's yeah. one thing. You don't really develop it, do you? The guy either has it or he doesn't.
Right. You can't – a leopard doesn't change its spots, right? And you can't ask all of a sudden De'Aaron Fox to go out there and beat this menace. What's up, DJ Elements? To beat this menace out there and beat this guy if he's not. You got to be true to yourself. And so – and yeah. It's you got to bring somebody in like that, though. I think.
Why y'all didn't ask Elements like for no popcorn?
I got popcorn, Jay.
No, everybody that's coming by,
popcorn.
You got to ask.
Nah, bro. Look,
everybody
I got
brought popcorn. We got yeah more and popcorn than we could eat.
Look at
now.
This, Jay.
Okay.
My guy James hooked me up. Check this out. You see this? My guy James brought in the big bag of popcorn for me, so I'm all set on popcorn right now. I'm about to open this up. Because I already finished this box.
Yeah,
so,
somebody yeah. on the chat suggests a Jiffy Pop endorsement, maybe. National. You go national with a Jiffy Pop endorsement.
You remember that back in the day?
Jiffy Pop.
Jiffy Pop. The before the microwaves?
Treat. As much fun to make as it is to eat.
See?
Yeah.
You know the jingle. Like, yeah. you should get that endorsement. Those were the days. Kids these days don't know the life before a microwave.
Yeah,
man.
They're probably better off. But anyway, here's what I don't like about the Lakers, Chapter 17. Did you hear about this? You know they have this Kobe statue that was unveiled
Three
last
of them.
Month.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of errors on the base that they got to fix.
I heard about that, yes. I heard about that.
They have a Kobe statue, and they have a bunch of things written on the bottom of it, and a lot of it, there's mistakes. So the names of Jose Calderon and Von Wafer misspelled on the base. Yeah. In a rendering of the box score from Kobe's 81-point game, along with a misspelling of the phrase, coach's decision. I don't know, maybe today in this, you know, where we text and we're not that concerned about grammar, maybe to a lot of people it's not a big deal. To me, this is incredible. There are also minor formatting mistakes in another spot on the busy base of the statue. It's a statue. Have somebody check it. Before you actually commit it to stone, am I right?
You're right. And I was told this story in L.A. last week when I was there because I was talking to my guy JR about it. And apparently they just took it either right off the NBA box score or the basketball reference page. Like one of them,
uh-huh.
they just went, you know, all right, it looks right there. That's what we're using. But there were errors on there. I think there were errors in terms of, like, the stats, too,
if
I'm correct. Yeah. And you got to redo that, right?
Yes. Let's see. The Lakers said in a statement, well, we have been aware of this for a few weeks and are already working to get it corrected soon. That's a disgrace.
Sounds like Genie Bus.
Yeah.
That sounds like Genie Bus, right?
We are. We've been aware of this for a few weeks. The box score carved into the marble base of the 19-foot bronze statue. So there you go. Yeah, the statue is the first of three renderings of Kobe that'll stand outside the downtown arena. That's terrible.
That's unbelievable.
But that's the Lakers for you. All right, here's the question then.
Yes.
Someday maybe we will have a King statue outside the arena. Maybe not. But if we do, and they ask Kyle Draper, Drapes, the statue, first one, maybe there'll be many more. Who do we start with?
Wow.
Who do we start with?
Who do we start with?
No wrong answer necessarily.
I would probably start with Mitch.
Well, Mitch? Okay.
Yeah, I'd probably go Mitch.
You being a company man, I thought you were going right for Vivek, but.
No.
Watch this.
Right? Hey, Kevin Johnson, you know, helping keep the team here. No, I'd go Mitch. I was thinking C-Web, Jerry Reynolds. Who would you put?
I might.
And we're just talking Sacramento Kings, right? We're not going Nate Tiny Archibald. Or
I would put one of two things, and I think I like the second one better than the first. But first would be maybe Lukanbill, because without him, who knows?
Yeah.
The other one would be I would put the Sports Illustrated cover.
All five.
A statue of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that idea. Yeah. I'm with you on that, because that team right there, I mean – to me, that put the Kings on the map.
They did.
Like, as a guy growing up in Philadelphia, sure, I knew about Reggie Theus, L-Train, Lionel Simmons. But when that group, you know, made it to the conference finals, challenged the Lakers, that's when Sacramento was nationwide, international, the Kings, you know?
Yeah, it really was.
When you think of Sacramento Kings basketball, that's the era you go right back to.
Mm-hmm. If you want to play along, 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Something comes up every so often, that first King statue, if we do one. Who should it be? Of course, we don't need one because we got who is it? Piglet. We got that statue out there. That's great. That's tremendous. It's a good thing to have outside your arena. All right, when we come right back here, tell you how the Bucks' two superstars – both of them could have been and nearly were Kings. And that story's next with the Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports.